After a slow minute, they reached the spot where one of the balloons was tethered to the tower. Tally touched the tether with her bare hand, feeling its rain-slick links.
No problem. It's metal.
Yeah, but is it enough metal? Zane asked. Tally shrugged. He rolled his eyes, and you thought my plan was risky.
Okay, I'll take the stupid-looking one.
He slid around the tower's girth to where the other balloon bobbed in the breeze. Tally grinned, seeing that it was shaped like a giant pig's head with protruding ears and two big eyes painted on the pink nylon of its envelope. At least her balloon was a normal color, silvery and reflective, with a blue stripe around its equator. From up in the gondola, she heard the unmistakable sound of a champagne cork popping, then laughter. It wasn't far away, but getting up was going to be tricky. Her eyes followed the length of the tether, which drooped down before curving up to where it was attached to the gondola's bottom. The sinuous line reminded her of the roller coaster out in the rusty ruins. Of course, the roller coaster had a lot more metal in it, almost as if it had been designed for hoverboarding. This slender length of chain would provide slim pickings for her board's magnetic lifters. And, unlike the roller coaster, the tether was in constant motion. The balloon was drifting slowly downward as the air in its envelope cooled. But Tally knew it would suddenly jump up and pull the tether taut if the burner was ignited. Worse, the hot airs might get bored of hovering around and decide to go for a night ride, releasing the tether and leaving nothing between Tally and the ground. Zane was right. This wasn't the easiest way to get a hold of a balloon, but there was no time to requisition one properly, or wait for the hot airs in the gondola to get bored and decide to land. If they were going to make it to the rusty ruins before dawn, the escape had to start soon. Maybe someone would find Shay while this new plan was unfolding. Tally crept farther up the spire wall, rising until the tether ring was just under the center of her board. She nudged herself away from the party spire, drifting out over open space, balancing her hoverboard across the tether like a tightrope walker on a plank of wood. She moved slowly forward, the lifters straining and trembling, their invisible magnetic fingers pushing down the chain. Once or twice, the board actually scraped the links, sending a shudder through Tally. She saw the balloon dip a little as her weight disrupted the delicate balance between hot air and gravity. Tally descended until she reached the halfway point, then began to climb toward the balloon. Her board trembled harder as it left the party spire behind, until she was certain the lifters were about to fail, dumping her into a 50-meter fall. From this height, crash bracelets were much worse than a bungee jacket. Being jerked to a halt by her wrists would probably dislocate her shoulder. Of course, that was nothing compared to what the crusher might have done. But the lifters didn't fail. The board continued to rise, climbing up toward the gondola of the balloon. She heard a few shouts from the party spire's balcony behind her, and knew she and Zane had been spotted. What sort of bubbly new game was this? A face appeared over the edge of the gondola, looking down with a surprised expression.
Hey, look, someone's coming.
What? How? The other three pretties in the balloon crowded onto the near side to peer down at her, their shifting weight making the tether wobble. Tally swore as her board swayed perilously under her feet.
Stay still up there, she shouted, and don't pull the burn chain.
Her barked commands were met by surprised silence, but at least they stopped moving around. A minute later, Tally's shuddering board had pulled almost to within reach of the gondola. She bent her knees and jumped, in free fall, for a sickening moment before her hands grasped the wicker rail. Hands reached down to help pull her up, as soon as Tally was inside, facing four wide-eyed hot airs. Relieved of her weight, her board followed her up, and she pulled it in.
Whoa, how'd you do that? I didn't know hoverboards could come this high. Hey, you're Tally Youngblood.
Who else?
She grinned and leaned over the side. The ground was coming closer, her weight and the boards tugging the balloon earthward.
Now, I hope you don't mind landing this thing. Me and my friends need to go for a little ride.
By the time the balloon was settling on the lawn in front of Garbo Mansion, a pack of Crims on hoverboards had arrived, Fausto at their head. Tally saw the pink-eared shape of Zane's balloon coming to rest nearby, bouncing slowly to a halt.
"Don't get out yet," she told the hijacked hot airs. "We don't want this thing to shoot up into the air empty."
They waited while Paris and Fausto cruised over and climbed into the gondola.
"How many will it hold, Tally?" Fausto said.
The gondola was made of wicker. She ran her hand across the woven cane, which was still the perfect substance if you wanted something strong, light, and flexible.
"Let's take 4 in each."
"So what are you guys doing?"
One of the hot airs got up enough nerve to ask.
"Wait and see," Tally said.
"And when they interview you for the feeds, feel free to tell them all about it." The 4 of them stared at her with widened eyes, realizing that they were going to be famous.
"But keep quiet for the next hour or so, otherwise our little trick won't work, and it won't be as bubbly a story."
They nodded obediently.
"How do you release the tether?" Tally asked, realizing that for all her plans to do so, she'd never been up in a balloon.
"Pull this cord to cut loose," one of the hot airs answered, "and push this button when you want a hover car to come get you."
Tally smiled. That was one feature they wouldn't be needing.
Seeing her expression, one of the hot airs said, "Hey, you guys are going somewhere really far, aren't you?"
Tally paused for a moment, knowing that what she said would wind up on the feeds and then be repeated down through generations of uglies and new pretties. It was worth the risk to tell the truth, she decided. These 4 wouldn't want to short-circuit their brush with criminal fame, so they wouldn't be talking to the authorities until it was way too late.
"We're going to the new smoke," she said in a slow, clear voice. They stared at her with disbelief.
"Chew on that, Dr. Cable," she thought happily.
The gondola shook, and Tally turned to find that Zane had jumped in.
"Mind if I join you? There's 4 in my balloon," he said, "and we've got another bunch taking over one more."
"The rest are set to go on our signal," Fausto said.
Tally nodded. As long as she and Zane escaped by balloon, it didn't matter how the others went. She looked up at the burner hanging over their heads, purring like an idling jet engine, waiting to heat the air in the envelope again. Tally just hoped it was powerful enough to expand the cuffs wider than their wrists, or at least destroy the transmitters in them. She pulled the fire-resistant gloves from her pocket and handed a pair to Zane.
"Much better plan, Tally," he said, looking at the idling burner. "A furnace that can fly. We'll be at the edge of the city by the time we're free."
She smiled at him, then said to the hot airs, "Okay, guys, you can get out now. Thanks for all your help. And remember, not to mention this to anyone for at least an hour." They nodded and jumped out of the gondola one by one, retreating a few meters to give it room as it gained buoyancy, bobbing impatiently in the breeze.
"Ready?" she called to the pig-faced balloon.
The Crims inside gave a thumbs up. A third balloon was coming down not far away. They would be headed up soon. The more rogue balloons, the better. If they all left their interface rings in the gondolas when they jumped, the wardens would have a busy night.
"We're all set," Zane said softly. "Let's go."
Tally's eyes swept the horizon, taking in Garbo Mansion, the party spires, the lights of New Pretty Town, the world she had looked forward to her whole ugly life. She wondered if she would ever see the city again. Of course, Tally had to return, if Shay hadn't gotten the word. Her cutting was really just a struggle to be cured. There was no way Tally could leave her behind for good, whether Shay hated her or not.
"Okay, let's go," she said, then whispered, "Sorry, Shay. I'll come back for you."
She reached up and pulled the ascent chain. The burner burst into a full-throttled roar, blistering heat washing over them, the envelope beginning to swell overhead. The balloon began to rise.
"Whoa," Paris cried. "We are out of here."
Fausto let out a whoop and pulled the release cord, the gondola bucking as the tether's weight fell away. Tali locked eyes with Zane. They were rising fast now, passing the top of the party spire, a dozen pretties on its balcony drunkenly hailing them.
"I'm really leaving," Zane said softly. "Finally."
She grinned. There would be no backing out for Zane this time. She wouldn't let him. The balloon quickly left the party spire below, rising higher than any building in New Pretty Town. Tali could see the silver band of river all around them, the darkness of Uglyville, and the dull lights of the burbs in every direction. Soon they would be high enough to glimpse the sea. She released the ascent chain, silencing the burner. They didn't want to get too high. The balloons weren't fast enough to escape the warden's hover cars. They would need their boards for that. Soon they would have to jump, free-falling until their hoverboards could pick up the city's magnetic grid and catch them. Not as simple as falling with a bungee jacket, but not too dangerous, she hoped. Looking down, Tali shook her head and sighed. Sometimes it felt like her life was a series of falls from ever greater heights. Tali could see that the wind was carrying them quickly now, pushing the balloon away from the sea, though, strangely, the air felt motionless around them. Of course, Tali realized, the balloon was moving along with the air currents, as if she were perfectly still, and the world sliding along beneath her. The rusty ruins were slipping away behind them, but there were lots of rivers around the city, their beds filled with mineral deposits that could support a hoverboard. The Crims had planned on heading out in lots of directions. Everyone knew how to get back to the ruins no matter where the wind took them. Tali dropped her winter coat, crash bracelets, and gloves to the gondola's floor. Warmth still radiated from the glowing burner, so she didn't feel too cold. She pulled on her heat-resistant gloves, sliding the left one underneath the interface cuff, pulling it up past her elbow and almost to her armpit. Across from her, Zane was also getting ready. Now to bring their cuffs within reach of the flame. She looked up. The burner was held to the gondola by a frame with 8 arms, stretching over them like a giant metal spider. She put one foot on the railing and held tightly to the burner frame, pulling herself up. From this precarious perch, Tali glanced down at the city passing below, hoping the balloon wasn't going to start rocking in some sudden wind. She took a deep breath. Fausto. The signal. He nodded and lit his Roman candle, which began to hiss and to spit out green and purple flares. Tali watched the signal repeated by nearby Crims, and then spread across the island in a series of colored plumes. They were committed now.
"Okay, Zane," she said. "Let's get these things off."
Burner. The 4 nozzles of the burner were barely a meter from her face, still glowing, radiating heat into the cold night air. Tali reached out and tapped one gingerly. The woman in the shop had been telling the truth. Tali could feel the burner's ridges through the heat-resistant fabric, her fingertips sensing a few stray bumps where it had been welded together. But she had no sense of temperature at all. The burner wasn't hot or cold. Nothing. The feeling was uncanny, as if her hand were immersed in body temperature water. She looked across at Zane, who had pulled himself up on the other side of the burner. "These things really work, Zane. I can't feel a thing."
He looked at his own gloved left hand, unconvinced. 2,000 degrees, you said?"
"That's right."
"As long as you believed every statistic tossed off by a middle pretty artist blowing glass in the middle of the night."
"I'll go first," she offered.
"No way. We'll do it together."
"Don't be dramatic." Tali looked down at Fausto, whose face was as pale as when Zane's hand had been in the crusher. "Give the burner cord a little tug, as short as you can, on my signal."
"Hang on," Paris said. "What are you guys doing?"
Tali realized that no one had brought Paris up to speed on the plan. He stared at her with a look of total confusion.
Well, there wasn't time for explanations now.
"Don't worry,"
We have gloves on, she said, and placed her left hand on the burner.
Gloves? Paris said.
Yeah, special gloves.
Hit it, Fausto, Tally cried.
A wave of heat struck, the pure blue flame of the burner blindingly bright. Tally slammed her eyes shut, the inferno like a desert wind on the skin of her face. She ducked her head below the burner frame and heard the cry of horrified surprise that escaped from Paris's lips. A half second later, the burner stopped. Tally opened her eyes, yellow after images of the flame crowding her vision. But she saw her fingers flexing in front of her, still whole. My hand didn't feel a thing, she shouted. She blinked away the dancing yellow spots and saw that the middle of her cuff was glowing a bit. It didn't look any bigger, though.
What are you doing? Paris shouted.
Fausto shushed him. All right, Zane said, thrusting his hand out over the burner. Let's do it fast. They must know we're up to something by now. Tally nodded. The cuff had to have felt the scorching burst of flame, like the locket Dr. Cable had given Tally before her trip to the smoke. It was probably designed to send some kind of signal if damaged. She took a deep breath of the cold night air, placing her hand over the burner again and ducking her head.
Okay, Fausto, burn it until I say stop.
Another wash of blistering heat poured over Tally. Paris stared up at her, his terrified expression turned demonic by the intense fire, and she had to look away from him. Above them, the envelope began to swell, and the balloon was tugged upward by its load of superheated air. The gondola swayed, testing Tally's grip on the burner frame. Her left shoulder, covered only by her t-shirt, was taking the worst of the inferno. Past the glove's protection, her skin itched like a bad sunburn. Sweat trickled down her back in the relentless heat. Weirdly, the parts of Tally that felt the furnace the least were her gloved hands, even her left, sitting in the inferno's very center. She imagined the cuff hidden within that blaze, turning red, then white, gradually expanding. After what seemed like a solid minute, she yelled, "Okay, hold it." The burner stopped, and the air was instantly cool around her, the night suddenly black. Tally stood up from her crouch, feet still on the gondola's railing, and blinked, amazed at how still and silent it was with the raging flame extinguished. She pulled her hand from the burner, expecting it to be a blackened stump, no matter what her nerve endings told her. But all five fingers wiggled in front of her. The cuff glowed, blazing white, mesmerizing blue flickers traveling around its edge. The smell of molten metal struck her nose. "Quick, Tally," Zane yelled, jumping down into the gondola. He started tugging at his cuff. "Before they cool off." She leaped down from the rail and started pulling, glad that she had brought two gloves for each of them. The cuff slid down on her arm, but it came to a halt as it always did, catching the usual spot. She squinted at the glowing band, trying to see if it had grown. It seemed bigger, but maybe the heat-resistant glove was thicker than she thought, making up the difference. Tally squeezed the fingers of her left hand together and tugged again. The cuff crept another centimeter along. Heat still radiated from the ring of metal, but it was gradually turning a dull red, its light fading. As it cooled, would it shrink around her hand now, crushing her wrist? She gritted her teeth and pulled once more, as hard as she could, and the cuff slipped off, dropping onto the floor of the gondola like a glowing coal.
Yes!
Finally, she was free. Tally looked up at the others. Zane was still struggling. Fausto and Paris were scrambling to avoid her glowing cuff as it rolled, steaming and hissing across the gondola floor.
I did it, she said softly. It's off.
Well, mine's not, Zane grunted. His cuff was wedged around the thick of his wrist, its glow faded to a dull red. He swore and stepped back up onto the gondola's railing.
Hit it again.
Fausto nodded and gave another long blast on the burner. Tally turned away from the heat, looking down at the city, trying to clear the spots from her eyes. They were past the green belt now,
over the burbs. She could see the factory belt coming up, dotted with industrial orange work lights, and past that the absolute blackness that marked the edge of the city. They had to jump soon. In a few more minutes, they would pass beyond the metal grid that underlay the city. Without the grid, their hoverboards wouldn't fly or even stop a fall, and they'd be forced to crash land the balloon instead of bailing out. She looked up at the swollen envelope, wondering how long it would take the still-rising balloon to settle back to Earth. Maybe if they could rip the envelope open somehow to get themselves down faster. But how hard would a torn balloon crash land? And without working hoverboards, the four of them would have to hike until they reached a river, giving the wardens plenty of time to find the crumpled balloon and track them down. "Come on, Zane," Tally said. "We've got to hurry."
"I'm hurrying, okay?"
"What's that smell?" Fausto said.
"What?"
Tally pulled back into the gondola, sniffing at the still, hot air. Something was burning. The city's edge. "It's us," Fausto shouted. He jumped back, releasing the burner chain, staring down at the gondola floor. Tally smelled it then. Burning cane, like the smell of brush thrown onto a campfire. Somewhere under their feet, her red-hot cuff had ignited the wicker gondola. She glanced up at Zane, still perched on the railing. He ignored the other's panicked cries, tugging fiercely at his glowing cuff. Paris and Fausto were hopping around, trying to find the source of the smell. "Relax," she said. "We can always jump."
"I can't. Not yet," Zane shouted, still struggling with the cuff.
Paris looked as if he was about to leap out of the balloon without bothering to take his hoverboard. Her vision was finally clearing from the burner's glare, and Tally looked down at her feet. A bottle lay there, left behind by the hot airs. She reached for it with her gloved hands. It was full. "Hold on, you guys," she said, and with a practiced motion, twisted off the foil and placed both thumbs beneath the cork. She popped it, watching the cork soar into the dark void. "Everything's under control." Froth bubbled out, and Tally put one thumb over the bottle's mouth. Shaking the bottle, she sprayed champagne across the floor of the gondola. An angry sizzle came from the smoldering flames.
"Got it," Zane cried at that moment.
His cuff fell off and rolled under her feet, and Tally calmly emptied the rest of the bottle onto it. The smell of molten metal rose up around her, tinged with an oddly sweet smell, boiled champagne. Zane was staring with amusement at his freed left hand. He pulled off the heat-resistant gloves and tossed them overboard.
"It worked,"
he said, and swept Tally into a hug. She laughed, letting the bottle drop to the floor and pulling off her own gloves.
"Time for that later. Let's get out of here."
"Okay." He balanced his board on the gondola's railing, looking down.
"Damn, that's a long fall."
Fausto tugged at a dangling cord. "I'll vent some hot air. Maybe we can get a little lower."
"No time," Tally cried. "We're almost at the end of town. And if we get separated, meet at the tallest building in the ruins. And remember, don't let go of your board on the way down."
They all scrambled to put on their backpacks, bumping into one another in the small space, Zane and Tally struggling back into their winter coats and crash bracelets. Fausto pulled off his interface ring and threw it to the gondola floor, grabbed his board, and jumped out with a whoop. The balloon pitched upward as his weight left it behind. When Zane was ready, he turned and kissed her.
"We did it, Tally. We're free."
She looked into his eyes, dizzy with the thought that they were finally here, at the edge of the city, at the beginning of freedom.
"Yeah, we made it.
See you down there." He looked over his shoulder at the distant Earth, then turned back to her.
"I love you."
"I'll see you down," she began, but the words sputtered out. It took a moment to replay in her mind what Zane had said. Finally, she managed,
"Oh, me too."
He laughed, then let out a wordless cry as he tumbled over the rail, the gondola bucking again under its two remaining passengers.
Tally blinked, dazzled for a moment by Zane's unexpected words. But she shook her head to clear it. There was no time to get pretty-headed. She had to jump now. She pulled the straps of her backpack tight, wrestling her hoverboard up to the rail. "Hurry up!" she shouted at Paris. He was just standing there, staring over the side. "What are you waiting for?" she cried. He shook his head.
"I can't."
"You can do it. Your board will stop your fall. All you have to do is hang on," she shouted. "Just jump. Gravity does the rest."
"It's not the fall, Tally," Paris said.
He turned to face her.
"I don't want to leave."
"What?"
"I don't want to leave the city."
"But this is what we've been waiting for."
"Not me," he shrugged. "I like being a crim and being bubbly, but I never thought we'd get this far. I mean, like, leaving home forever?"
"Paris, I know you've been out there before, you and Shay, and Zane and Fausto always talked about escaping, but I'm not like you guys."
"But you and me were..."
Tally's voice caught. She was about to say best friends forever, but the old words wouldn't come out anymore. Paris had never been to the smoke, had never tangled with special circumstances, had never even been in trouble. Everything had always gone smoothly for him. Their lives had been so different for so long.
"You sure you want to stay?"
He nodded slowly.
"I'm sure, but I can still help. I'll keep them busy for you. I'll stay airborne as long as I can, then push the pickup button. They'll have to come out and get me."
Tally started to argue, but she couldn't help remembering sneaking across the river right after Paris's operation, visiting him in Garbo Mansion. He had adjusted so quickly, loving New Pretty Town right from the beginning. Maybe the whole crim thing had just been a joke to him. But she couldn't leave him here in the city alone. "Paris, think, without us around, you won't be bubbly anymore. You'll go back to being a pretty head." He smiled sadly.
"I don't mind, Tally. I don't need to be bubbly."
"You don't? But don't you feel how much better it is?" He shrugged.
"It's exciting, but you can't keep fighting the way things are forever. At some point you have to..."
"Give up?" Paris nodded, the smile still on his face, as if giving up wasn't really that bad, as if fighting was only worthwhile as long as it was amusing.
"Okay, stay then."
She turned away, not trusting herself to say anything more. But when Tally looked down, all she saw was darkness.
"Oh, crap," she said softly.
The city had run out. It was too late to jump. Side by side, they stared into the darkness, the wind carrying them farther and farther away. Paris finally broke the silence.
"We'll come down eventually, right?"
"Not soon enough," she sighed. "The wardens probably already know that our cuffs are fried. They'll come looking for us soon. We're sitting ducks up here."
"Oh, I really didn't mean to screw things up for you."
"It's not your fault. I waited too long." Tally swallowed, wondering if Zane would ever find out what happened. Would he think she'd fallen to her death? Or would he guess that she'd chickened out, like Paris? Whatever he thought, Tally saw their future fading out, disappearing like the distant lights of the city behind them. Who knew what special circumstances would do to her brain when they caught her again? She looked at Paris.
"I really thought you wanted to come."
"Listen, Tally, I just got caught up in everything. Being a crim was exciting, and you were my friends, my clique. What was I supposed to do? Argue against running away? Arguing's bogus." She shook her head.
"I thought you were bubbly, Paris."
"I am, Tally. But tonight is about as bubbly as I want to get. I like breaking the rules, but living out there?" He waved his hand at the wild below them, a cold, unfriendly sea of darkness.
"Why didn't you tell me before now?"
"I don't know. I guess it wasn't until we got up here that I realized you guys were so serious about never coming back."
Tally closed her eyes, remembering what having a pretty mind was like. Everything was vague and fuzzy, the world nothing but a source of entertainment, the future nothing but a blur. A few tricks weren't enough to make everyone bubbly, she supposed. You had to want your mind to change. Maybe some people had always been pretty heads, even back when the operation had been invented. Maybe some people were happier being that way. But now you can stay with me, he said, putting his arm around her. It'll be like it was supposed to be. You and me pretty. Best friends forever. Tally shook her head, a sickening feeling sweeping over her. I am not staying, Paris. Even if they take me back tonight, I'll find a way to escape. Why are you so unhappy there? She sighed, looking out over the darkness. Zane and Fausto would already be headed toward the ruins, thinking she wasn't far behind. How had she let this opportunity slip away? The city always seemed to claim her in the end. Was she really like Paris, somewhere deep inside? Why am I unhappy? Tally repeated softly. Because the city makes you feel the way they want you to be, Paris. And I want to be myself. That's why. He squeezed her shoulder and gave her a sad look. But people are better now than they used to be. Maybe they have good reasons for changing us, Tally. And their reasons don't mean anything unless I have a choice, Paris. And they don't give anyone a choice. Tally shook his hand from her shoulder, staring back at the distant city. A set of winking lights was rising into the air, a fleet of hover cars gathering. She remembered that the special's cars were held aloft by spinning blades, like the Rusty's ancient helicopters, so they could fly beyond the grid. They must be headed this way, pursuing the final signals of the cuffs. She had to get out of this balloon now. Before he'd jumped, Fausto had tied off the descent cord, and hot air was spilling from the envelope every moment. But the balloon, superheated as they'd burned off the cuffs, was losing altitude so slowly, the ground hardly looked any closer. Then Tally saw the river. It stretched out below them, catching moonlight like a silver snake, winding out of the ore-rich mountains to make its way toward the sea. On its bed would be centuries worth of metal deposits, enough to make her hoverboard fly. Maybe enough to catch her fall. Maybe she could get her future back. She pulled her board back up onto the rail. I'm going. But Tally, you can't. The river. Paris looked down, his eyes wide. It looks so small. What if you miss? I won't. She gritted her teeth. You've seen those formation bungee jumpers, haven't you? They've only got their arms and legs to guide themselves down. I've got a whole hoverboard. It'll be like having wings. You're crazy. I'm leaving. She kissed Paris quickly, then threw one leg over the rail. Tally, he grabbed her hand. You could die. I don't want to lose you. She shook him off violently, and Paris took a fearful step back. Pretties didn't like conflict. Pretties didn't take risks. Pretties didn't say no. Tally was no longer pretty. You already have, she said. And, clutching her hoverboard, she threw herself into the void. Part 3. Outside. The beauty of the world has two edges, one of laughter, one of anguish. Cutting the heart asunder. Virginia Woolf, A Room of One's Own. Descent. Tally dropped into silence, spinning out of control. After the stillness in the balloon, the rush of passing air built around her with unexpected strength, almost tearing the hoverboard from Tally's hands. She held it tightly to her chest, but the wind's fingers continued to search for purchase. Hungry to pry away her only hope of survival. She clasped her hands around the board's underbelly, kicking her legs, trying to control the spinning. Gradually, the dark horizon steadied. But Tally was upside down,
looking up at the stars and hanging from the board. She could see the dark orb of the balloon above. Then its flame ignited, giving the envelope a silvery glow against the darkness, like a huge, dull moon in the sky. She guessed that Paris was headed upward to throw off the pursuit. At least he was trying to help. His change of heart stung her, but she didn't have time to worry about it, not while plummeting toward the earth. Tally struggled to turn herself over, but the hoverboard was wider than she was. It caught the air like a sail, threatening to pull itself from her grasp. It was like trying to carry a large kite in a strong wind, except that if she lost control of this particular kite, she'd be splattered all over the ground in about 60 seconds. Tally tried to relax, letting herself hang there. Something was tugging at her wrist, she realized. Up here in the void, the board's lifters might be useless for flying, but they would still interact with the metal in her crash bracelets. She adjusted her left bracelet to maximize the connection. Her grip on the board made sure, she straightened out her right arm into the rushing air. It was like riding in her parents' ground car as a littlie, her hands stuck out a window. Flattening her palm increased the resistance, and Tally found herself slowly beginning to turn over. A few seconds later, the hoverboard was beneath her. Tally swallowed at the sight of the earth spread out below, vast and dark and hungry. The rushing cold seemed to cut straight through her coat. She'd been falling for what felt like forever, but the ground didn't look any closer. There was nothing to give it scale except the winding river, still no bigger than a piece of ribbon. Tally angled her outstretched palm experimentally and watched the curve of moonlit water turn clockwise beneath her. She pulled her arm in, and the river steadied. Tally grinned. At least she had some control over her wild descent. As she fell, the silvery band of river grew in size. First slowly, then faster, the dark horizon of Earth expanding like some huge predator advancing toward her, blotting out the starlit sky. Clinging to the hoverboard with both hands, Tally discovered that her outstretched legs could guide her descent, keeping the river directly below her. And then in the last 10 seconds, she began to realize how large the river was, its surface wide and troubled. She saw things moving in it. It grew faster and faster. When the board's lifters kicked in, it was like a door slamming in her face, flattening her nose and breaking open her lower lip, the taste of blood instantly in her mouth. Her wrists were twisted cruelly by the crash bracelets, and her momentum squashed her against the breaking hoverboard, forcing the breath from her lungs like a giant vise. She struggled to pull in a breath. The hoverboard was slowing rapidly, but the river's surface still grew, stretching farther in all directions like a huge mirror full of starlight until... Slap! The board struck the water like the flat of a giant hand, catching Tally's body with another battering jolt, an explosion of light and sound filling her head. And then she was underwater, ears filled with a dull roar. She let go of the board and clawed for the surface, her lungs emptied by the impact. Forcing her eyes open, Tally saw only the faintest glimmer of light filtering down through the murky river. Her arms struggled weakly, and the light grew slowly closer. Finally, she broke into the air, grasping and coughing. The river raged around her, the swift current kicking up whitecaps in every direction. She dog-paddled hard, the weight of her pack trying to pull her back under. Her lungs sucked in air, and she coughed violently, tasting blood in her mouth. Turning from side to side, Tally realized that she hit her mark too well. She was in the dead center of the river, 50 meters from either shore. She swore and kept paddling, waiting for a tug on her crash bracelets. Where was her hoverboard? It should have found her by now. It had taken so long for the lifters to kick in. Tally had expected to pull up in midair, not hit the river at speed. But after a few moments' thought, she realized what had happened. The river was deeper than she'd anticipated. The minerals on its floor were a long way below her kicking feet. She remembered how hoverboards sometimes got wobbly over the middle of the city river, too far from the mineral deposits for the lifters to work at full strength. It was lucky the board had slowed her fall at all. Tally looked around. Too dense to float, the hoverboard had probably sunk to the bottom, the raging current carrying her away from it. She turned her crash bracelet's calling range to a whole kilometer and waited for the board's nose to push itself above the surface. Shapes bobbed along in the water all around her, knobby and irregular, like a flotilla of alligators in the fast-moving current. What were they? Something nudged her. She spun around, but it was just an old tree trunk, not an alligator, and not her hoverboard. Tally grabbed onto it gratefully, though, already exhausted from paddling. In every direction were more trees, as well as branches, clots of reeds, masses of rotting leaves. The river was carrying all sorts of cargo on its surface. The rain, Tally thought. 3 days of downpour must have flooded the hills, washing all manner of stray matter down into the river, swelling its size and accelerating its current. The trunk she clung to was old and rotted black, but a few strands of green wood showed from a break. Had the flooding ripped it from the ground alive? Tally's fingers traced where the tree had broken, and she saw that something unnaturally straight had struck it, like the edge of a hoverboard. A few meters away, another log floated, cut with the same sharp edge. Tally's crash landing had snapped the old, rotten tree in half. Her face was bleeding from the impact. She could still taste the blood. So what damage had been done to the hoverboard? Tally twisted the call controls of her crash bracelet higher, setting them to burn their batteries down. Every second, the current was carrying her farther from where she'd landed. No hoverboard rose above the surface. No tugging came at her wrists. As the minutes passed, Tally began to admit to herself that the board was dead, a piece of junk at the bottom of the river. She switched her bracelets off and, still clinging to the log, began to kick her way toward shore. The riverbank was slippery with mud, the ground saturated by the rains and the swollen river. Tally waded to the shore in a small inlet, struggling through branches and reeds in the hip-deep water. It seemed the flood had collected everything that floated and dumped it in this one spot, including Tally Youngblood. She stumbled up the bank, desperate to reach dry ground, every instinct impelling her to keep moving away from the rushing water. Her exhausted body felt full of lead, and Tally slid back down the slope, becoming covered with mud. Finally, she gave up and huddled on the muddy ground, shaking in the freezing cold. Tally couldn't remember feeling so tired since becoming a new pretty, as if the river had sucked away her body's vitality. She took the fire starter from her pack and, with trembling fingers, gathered a pile of washed-up twigs. But the wood was so wet from 3 days of rain that the fire starter's tiny flame only made the twigs hiss dully. At least her coat was still working. She turned its heater up to full, not worrying about the batteries, and gathered herself into a ball. Tally waited for sleep to come, but her body wouldn't stop trembling, like a fever coming on back in ugly days. But new pretties almost never got sick, unless she'd run herself too far down this last month, eating almost nothing, staying out in the cold, running on adrenaline and coffee with hardly an hour in the last 24 when she hadn't been soaking wet. Or was she finally getting the same reaction from the cure as Zane? Was the pill beginning to damage her brain, now that she was beyond any hope of medical care? Tally's head pounded, fevered thoughts swirling around her. She had no hoverboard, no way of getting to the rusty ruins, except on foot. No one knew where she was. The world had been emptied of everything but the wild, the freezing cold, and Tally Youngblood. Even the absence of the cuff on her wrist felt strange, like the gap left behind by a missing tooth. Worst was the absence of Zane's body next to her. She'd stayed with him every night for the last month, and they'd spent most of every day together. Even in their enforced silence, she had grown used to his constant presence, his familiar touch, their wordless conversations. Suddenly he was gone, and Tally felt as if she'd lost some part of herself in the fall. She had imagined this moment 1,000 times, finally reaching the wild, free from the city at last. But never once had she imagined being here without Zane. And yet, here she was, utterly alone. Tally lay awake a long time, replaying in her mind those last frantic minutes in the balloon. If only she'd jumped sooner, or had thought to look down before the city grid ran out. After what Zane had said, she shouldn't have hesitated, knowing that this escape was their only chance for freedom together. Once again, things were screwed up, and it was all her fault. Finally, Tally's exhaustion overpowered her worries, and she drifted into troubled sleep. Alone. So, there was this beautiful princess. She was locked in a high tower, one whose smart walls had clever holes in them that could give her anything. Food, a clique of fantastic friends, wonderful clothes. And, best of all, there was this mirror on the wall, so that the princess could look at her beautiful self all day long. The only problem with the tower was that there was no way out. The builders had forgotten to put in an elevator, or even a set of stairs. She was stuck up there. One day, the princess realized that she was bored. The view from the tower, gentle hills, fields of white flowers, and a deep, dark forest fascinated her. She started spending more time looking out the window than at her own reflection, as is often the case with troublesome girls. And it was pretty clear that no prince was showing up, or at least that he was really late. So the only thing was to jump. The hole in the wall gave her a lovely parasol to catch her when she fell, and a wonderful new dress to wear in the fields and forest, and a brass key to make sure she could get back into the tower if she needed to. But the princess, laughing pridefully, tossed the key into the fireplace, convinced she would never need to return to the tower. Without another glance in the mirror, she strolled out onto the balcony and stepped off into midair. The thing was, it was a long way down, a lot farther than the princess had expected, and the parasol turned out to be total crap. As she fell, the princess realized she should have asked for a bungee jacket or a parachute or something better than a parasol, you know? She struck the ground hard and lay there in a crumpled heap, smarting and confused, wondering how things had worked out this way. There was no prince around to pick her up. Her new dress was ruined, and, thanks to her pride, she had no way back into the tower. And the worst thing was, there were no mirrors out there in the wild. So the princess was left wondering whether she in fact was still beautiful, or if the fall had changed the story completely. When Tally awoke from this bogus dream, the sun was halfway across the sky. She struggled to her feet, having to pry herself from the sucking embrace of the mud. At some point during the night, her winter coat had run out of charge. Without batteries, it was a cold thing clinging to her skin, still damp from her soaking in the river, and it smelled funny. Tally unstuck the coat from herself and laid it across the broad surface of a rock, hoping that the sun would dry it out. For the first time in days, the sky was cloudless. But in clearing, the air had turned crisp and cold. The warmer weather that had arrived with the rain had departed with it as well. The trees glittered with frost, and the mud under her feet sparkled, its thin layer of rime crackling underfoot. Her fever had passed, but Tally felt dizzy standing, so she knelt beside her backpack to look through its contents. The sum of everything she possessed. Fausto had managed to gather up some of the usual smoky survival gear,
a knife, water filter, position finder, fire starter, and some safety sparklers, along with a few dozen packets of soap. Remembering how valuable dehydrated food had been in the smoke, Tally had packed 3 months' worth, which was all wrapped up in waterproof plastic, fortunately. When Tally saw the two rolls of toilet paper she'd brought, however, she let out a groan. They were soaked through, reduced to bloated, squishy blobs of white. She placed them on the rocks next to her jacket, but doubted that it was even worth drying them out. She sighed. Even back in her smoky days, she'd never gotten used to the leaf thing. Tally found her pitiful pile of twigs, and remembered trying to light a fire the night before, too delirious to realize how stupid that would have been. The special circumstances hover cars that had come out after the balloon would have easily spotted a fire in the darkness. There was no evidence of pursuit in the sky this morning, but Tally decided to put some distance between herself and the river. Without a working heater in her jacket, she would need to build a fire that night. But first things first, which meant food. She trudged down to the river to fill the purifier, dried mud crumbling from her skin and clothing with every step. Tally had never been so dirty in her life, but she wasn't up to bathing in the freezing water, not without a fire to warm her up afterward. Last night's fever might have passed, thanks to her new pretty immune system kicking in, but she didn't want to take any risks with her health out here. Of course, Tally realized, it wasn't her own health she should be worrying about. Zane was out here somewhere too, maybe just as alone as she was. He and Fausto had jumped almost at the same moment, but they might have landed kilometers apart. If Zane had one of his attacks on his way to the ruins, with no one to help him? Tally shook the thought from her head. All she could do right now for Zane or anyone else was get to the ruins herself. And that meant making food, not worrying about things she couldn't control. The purifier took two fillings before it had strained enough pure water from the silty inlet to make a meal. She chose a packet of pad thai and set the purifier to boil. The smell of reconstituting noodles and spices soon rose from the gurgling water. By the time the meal pinged that it was ready, Tally was ravenous. As she reached the end of the pad thai, she realized there was no longer any point in going hungry, and immediately boiled up a packet of curry nudes. Starvation might have been useful for getting off the cuffs and staying bubbly, but her cuff was gone, and Tally now had the whole of the wild, dangerous and cold, to keep her bubbly. Not much chance of sinking into a pretty haze out here. After breakfast, the position finder offered up its bad news. Tally had to check her calculations twice before she believed the distance she'd traveled the night before. The winds from off the ocean had pushed the balloon a long way east, in the opposite direction from the rusty ruins, and then the river's current had carried her another long distance southward. She was more than a week's journey by foot to the ruins, if she went in a straight line. And straight lines wouldn't come into it. She had to go the long way around the city, staying in the forest to hide herself from the searchers in the air. Tally wondered how long the specials would bother to keep looking for her. Luckily, they didn't know that her hoverboard had disappeared into the river, so they would assume she was flying, not trudging along on foot. As far as they knew, Tally would have to stay near the river or some other natural vein of mineral deposits. The sooner she got away from the riverbank, the better. Tally packed up her pitiful camp unhappily. Her backpack held more than enough food for the journey, and the hills would be full of ready water after long rains, but she felt defeated already. From what Sussy and Dex had said, the new Smokies hadn't set up a permanent camp in the ruins. They might leave any day now, and she was a week away. Her only hope was that Zane and Fausto would stay behind, waiting for her to show up. Unless they thought she had been captured, or killed by the fall, or had simply chickened out. No, she told herself, Zane wouldn't think that last one of her. He might be worried, but Tali knew that he would wait for her, however long it took. She sighed as she tied the still damp coat around her waist and hoisted her backpack onto her shoulders. There was no point wondering about where the others were. Her only choice was to hike toward the ruins and trust that someone would be waiting when she arrived. Tali had nowhere else to go. The way through the forest was rugged, every step a battle. Back in the smoke, Tali had mostly traveled by hoverboard. When she had been forced to hike cross-country, it had been on paths hacked through trees. But this was nature in the raw, hostile and unrelenting. The dense undergrowth tugged at her feet, trying to trip her, throwing up thick bushes and ankle-twisting roots and impenetrable walls of thorn. Among the trees, the downpour still echoed. Pine needles sparkled with frost, which the day's heat was slowly changing to water, generating a constant rain of chill, sparkling mist. It was like a magnificent ice palace, with spears of sunlight shooting between the trees, visible in the mist like lasers through smoke. But every time Tali dared disturb a branch, it unloaded its freight of freezing water onto her head. She remembered traveling to the smoke through the ancient forest that had been destroyed by the Rusty's biologically engineered weeds. At least walking through the flattened landscape had been easier than this dense growth. Sometimes, you could almost see why the Rusty's had tried so hard to destroy nature. Nature could be a pain. As she walked, the struggle between the forest and Tali began to feel more and more personal. The grasping brambles seemed almost conscious of her, corralling Tali the way they wanted her to go, no matter what her direction finder said. The dense undergrowth would split open welcomingly, offering easy paths that wound pointlessly off her course. Hiking in a straight line was impossible. This was nature, not some rusty superhighway cutting through mountains and across deserts without any regard for the terrain. But as the afternoon progressed, Tali slowly became convinced that she was following an actual path, like the nature trails that the pre-Rusties had used a millennium before. She remembered what David had told her out in the smoke, that most of the pre-Rusty trails had originally been made by animals. Even deer, wolves, and wild dogs didn't want to fight their way through the virgin growth. Just like people, animals stuck to the same paths for generation after generation, forging tracks through the forest. Of course, Tali had always imagined that animal trails were something that only David could see. Having grown up in the wild, he was practically a pre-Rusty himself. But as the shadows lengthened around her, Tali found her path becoming easier and straighter, as if she had stumbled onto some uncanny fissure in the wild. A gnawing feeling started in her stomach. The random sounds of dripping trees began to play with her mind, and Tally's nerves began to twitch, as if she was being watched. It was probably just her perfect new pretty eyesight helping her spot the subtle marks of animal passage. She must have picked up more skills than she knew about in the smoke. This was an animal path. Certainly no people could live out here. Not this close to the city, where they would have been detected by the specials decades ago. Even out in the smoke, no one knew of any other communities living outside the cities. Humanity had decided 2 centuries ago to leave nature alone. Alone, Tali kept reminding herself. No one else was out here. Though, oddly, she couldn't decide whether being the only person in the forest made it feel less creepy or more. Finally, as the sky was fading to pink, Tali decided to come to a halt. She found an open clearing where the sun had beaten down all day, maybe drying out enough wood for a fire. The brutal hike had raised a sweat. Tally's shirt clung to her, and she'd never once worn her coat. But once the sun set, she knew the air would turn freezing cold again. Finding dry twigs was easy, and Tali weighed a few small logs in her hand to find the lightest, which would contain the least water.
All her smoky knowledge seemed to have come back, with no scraps of pretty-mindedness remaining after the escape. Now that she was out of the city, the cure had settled over Tally's mind for good. But she hesitated before putting the fire starter to the pile, paranoia staying her hand. The forest still made its sounds. Dripping water, bird cries, the skitterings of small animals among the wet leaves. And it was easy to imagine something watching her from the darkened spaces between the trees. Tally sighed. Maybe she still was a pretty head, making up irrational stories about the empty forest. The longer she stayed alone out here, the more Tally understood why the Rusties and their predecessors had believed in invisible beings, praying to placate spirits as they trashed the natural world around them. Well, Tally didn't believe in spirits. The only things she had to worry about were specials, and they would be looking along the river, kilometers behind her. Darkness had fallen as she built the fire, and it was already halfway to freezing. She couldn't risk another fever out here in the wild, alone. The fire starter flicked to life in her hand, and Tally held it to the twigs until a blaze erupted. She nursed the fire along with larger and larger branches until it was strong enough to ignite the lightest of her logs, then banked it with the others to dry them out. Soon, the blaze was hot enough to push her back on her heels, and Tally felt warmth stealing into her bones for what seemed like the first time in days. She smiled as she stared into the flames. Nature was tough. It could be dangerous. But unlike Dr. Cable or Shay or Paris, unlike people in general, it made sense. The problems it threw at you could be solved rationally. Get cold? Build a fire. Need to get somewhere? Walk there. Tally knew she could make it to the ruins, with or without a hoverboard under her. And from there she would eventually find Zane and the new smoke, and everything would be all right. Tonight, Tally realized happily, she was going to sleep well. Even without Zane beside her, she had made it through her first day of freedom in the wild, still bubbling.